Right, good morning and a very warm welcome, councillors, staff, members of the public, media. Can I introduce and a very warm welcome to their first council meeting, Richard Saunders, General Manager of Regulatory, and Gwyneth Elsom, General Manager of Policy, Science and Strategy. Where are you gone to, Gwyneth? Is she out the door? Oh, is she? Looking for coffee, right. Well, anyway, for those councillors that haven't met, Gwyneth, take the opportunity today, just want to say a special welcome to those two new general managers. I'm going to take a moment at the start of this meeting, before we start on agendas, to acknowledge the very recent loss of Stephen Cairns. He's actually the immediate past chairman, not that we have that position, but Stephen was a councillor from 2001 to 2010. He was chairperson from 2004 to 2010, and was the chair of what was then known as the Regional Affairs Committee, now known as the Regional Sector Group. So he led the regional councils and was the National Environment Spokesman for LGNZ between 2007 and 2010. For those of us that knew and worked with Stephen was an ambitious person. He enjoyed a good debate. There were some great stories at the funeral, and really didn't do it easily. Really took a step back, and he loved Otago, which was his adopted home. He actually was born and grew up in Invercargill, and enjoyed the outdoors, enjoyed the regional council work, and was a very proud proponent of regional councils in the end, actually, and chaired the council during some interesting times. You know, there was a stadium debate where we were at the early stages, although Stephen wasn't heavily involved personally, at some of the water plan work. Plan Change 6A was developed during his time. And did a good job in the chairman's role. A very proud, as I say, Otago person, and a very proud father of his four children. And I have been in contact with his children, and have passed on a message along those lines. Councillor Neil, Councillor Deaker, Mrs. Caldicott, and myself attended the funeral, along with some former staff and former councillors. Mrs. Crute, Mr. Martin, Mr. Scott and Mr. McRae were also in attendance. So it was a good turnout from ORC, and we were able to interact with Tricia and the family afterwards, and have passed on our condolences. Councillor Deaker, you worked with Stephen and knew Stephen very well. Would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, I'd love to. He was a good mate. We joined the council on the same day together. We sat together. We worked our way through the systems. We learnt about how it all worked together, and we chatted a lot. Stephen was from Head and Bush, up in Central South, and I lived 6 years in Winton, just a few k's down the track. We had a lot in common. We knew an awful lot of Southlanders. We were both very proud Southlanders. He was witty. He was pugnacious. He never took a step back, you're quite right. He and I fell into different camps in the stadium debates, and I'll never forget the day he absolutely shut me up in full stride. Quite rightly. I was reading my speech, and he stopped me, and I had to sit down, embarrassed, and fair enough. But through all that, we remained friends. I was very, very sad to watch his illness grow and his weak body not be able to withstand what eventually killed him. That was tragic. I miss Stephen. He was a very, very good man, a very good councillor, a very good chairman of this group. And he was very proud of the fact that he'd been chair of the ORC, and so he should have been. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Councillor. All right, can we please stand and just observe a moment's silence in memory of Stephen Gerard Cairns. Thank you, everyone. All right, on to the agenda. There are no apologies. Attendance. We'll move to confirming the agenda. And we do have a couple of items that I'd like to reshuffle in the order if we get to them and by then. So item 10.5, annual report, 10.9, statement of investment policies and objectives, the SIPO. And I think 10.6, got my order around the wrong way there, we'll deal with them after lunch. And if we have got to that point, we'll leapfrog those. With Council's agreement, everybody's comfortable with that. Thank you. There are no conflicts of interest that I've been aware of, a reminder there. Public forum, we do have a public forum, but that will be dealt with at lunchtime also. So immediately after lunch when we adjourn at 1 o'clock, we'll start with public forum. There are no presentations. We'll go straight to item 7, confirming the minutes of the 14th of August. They have been circulated. Move, Councillor Hope. Is somebody prepared to second? They're a true and accurate record. Thank you, Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. The actions, I think they're on page 14 or 15 of your agenda. I think we're all, they've either been assigned or achieved, I think. Yes? Righto. Nothing to follow up there. Mrs. Gunner, Councillor Lawton.
One question on the actions, please. Just 11.1, the appointment of Emmerich Zimmer as a representative to the
Yeah, 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 let me find it too.
It's agreed that current government's charter is due to be updated to reflect the partnership and scale. So are you talking about the same government?
No. So that is talking about the Tarupatoa Agreement across Otago with all councils, which is separate from ORC-specific agreement and documentation with the local runanga. There may be some interaction, but they're actually talking about two different things. One's the ORC one's much more operational, and the Tarupatoa is how we're going to play nicely together at a governance level, essentially, much higher level document. There may be some elements of crossover, but not much. Am I right, Mrs. Gunner?
Yeah, sure. And
they would
need to somehow link in.
Yes, they
would.
They would reference and be some link, but they are.
The partnership is kind of the next level.
Yes.
So conversations have continued. So I met with the new chief executive of Okaha and Mr. Allison recently, just to confirm his thinking about the process that we will undertake for the review. He was really clear that we may move towards a mana whakahonal agreement, but that both processes, whether it's MOU and mana whakahonal, are going to take some time, and given where we are at the moment, and of course the recent loss of Mr. Portiki, we obviously haven't started in any great level of detail on those discussions, but certainly I have confirmed with him that that's the way that those discussions will roll out. They will take some time.
Okay,
Yes, there will be. First of all, obviously, the structure of committees, how many there are, etc., would need to be determined. And then, then once that's done, the terms of reference for those committees, including representation, would also need to be reconsidered.
All right. On to item 9.1, the Chair's report. I'll take it largely as read. We do have a very tight agenda today, some lumpy documents to discuss and make decisions on, so I'm going to endeavour to keep us to time. You'll note some comment there around the Three Waters update with respect to there's a drinking water regulator being put in place. In September, Cabinet will be looking at further decisions, and we're in the middle of September now, obviously, around the other two waters regulators, whether that sits with the Regional Council or whether that is combined with the drinking water regulator. Keep an eye on that one. And under the fresh water heading, I hope you've had a read of that. You'll see a lot of work going on nationally by the regional sector, by regional councils combined, to understand what it means for regional councils and do some thinking around the implementation, plan making, all the issues that fall out of the freshwater proposals that are currently out for consultation. I'll leave it there. Are there any questions of the Chair's report? Councillor Laws.
Just one, but before I say that, can I just note that this is your last one?
Yes. We'll come to that okay. At the end of the meeting.
But I just wanted to say
yep.
It's probably one of your best ones too.
Okay.
Can I just compliment you though on the freshwater one, and I want to take you to paragraph 22.
Mm-hmm.
The implementation plan that the Ministry for the Environment is meant to be creating for, can you give a little bit more on that? When are we expected to see, and what sort of practical assistance are they?
No, I can't give too much more detail, but other than to say it's pleasing to note that they're actually, A, thinking about it, and B, for example, some of the questions that came up, and some of you will have been at the consultation meeting, some of the questions that came up there and have come up earlier through this process, Councillor Laws, have got MFE thinking about how do we actually deliver on some of this stuff. For one example I could give is the mapping of wetlands. So we're going down to 500 square metres, I think it is, so they're looking at a national ability to map them nationally, and which, if can be done accurately, would be extremely helpful rather than each council having to. So there does need to be, and it will be something in my view that submitters, in particular this council, needs to think about where there are opportunities for some national assistance as part of these proposals, that we should be pushing back to the Crown a bit and saying, well, actually, you need to pick up your own socks here, and that's yours, yes. And rather than being thrashed out or delivered by 16 councils around the country, if it's a national environmental standard or a qualification in the NPSFM, then actually there's some responsibility on you, Mr. Crown.
Okay.
So sorry, can't give you any more, but I just want to make sure you understood that thinking is actually the next stage is occurring within the Ministry, and certainly a lot of work going on behind the scenes, Mrs. Gardner, in the sector.
Yes.
About what this means for us and where we can work together to provide efficiencies. Finding a way through these proposals is going to take a while to become clear. No further questions. I'll move to the Chief Executive's report, Mrs. Gardner.
Thank you. In the interest of time, I'm very happy to take my report as read, but also happy to answer questions.
Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I just would like to ask you, through the Chair, Mrs. Gardner, are you able just to give us a little bit more of your meetings with the Rural Bank? Because I think that's a really key part you've put in there, and
yes,
I'd love to know
yes.
a little bit. Could you mind expanding
sure.
and perhaps your thinking? And
absolutely. You may remember that we had an environmental extension group meeting back on the 16th of August. That's a group that's been around for some time. When Westpac were made aware that that was happening, they asked if they could come and attend. What we decided to do instead was actually have a separate session with the banking sector, the rural banking sector. And that was organised through our rural liaison team. We had a room, so we were in here, and we had a room full of bankers from different banks around Otago who work regularly with the rural sector. It was an initial meeting, so it was a little bit of getting to know each other, and also we were able to discuss our proposed changes to 6A. We also talked about sort of where national policy is heading. And I also asked the bankers to help us understand a little further some of the comments that get made around things like bankability with the rural sector. And what was just really interesting, I guess, and clear to me was it very much depends on the individual situation of the individual operator or farmer as to where that position is. Things like consenting terms may well be a consideration, but they're certainly not the only consideration. And since that meeting, we've had further contact with the banking sector, who have reported that they found the meeting incredibly useful and would like to see us engage with them, you know, on a more sort of regular basis, I guess, which we're committed to doing.
Good. Councillor Noon.
Absolutely. One of the things that I think helped us was we had about, rough estimate, probably about 200 between the four sessions we've had so far. And I guess one of the things that helped us was that we sought the advice of the catchment groups. We had groups that hosted us, but B, we sought their advice around timing and when was the most appropriate. So we haven't been to South Otago yet, and that's primarily because the advice from them was to wait a bit further into lambing before we did that. So it was very much, those sessions were very much organised with what was best for the community in mind. We had fantastic turnout, and they were incredibly rewarding sessions. We enjoyed the engagement very much. We got, I think, probably even more out of it ourselves than perhaps the community did, but they went very well.
Thank you. All right, I'll move that we receive the Chairperson's and Chief Executive's report, seconded Councillor Deka. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. On to item 10.1. And this is the recommendations from the hearing panel with respect to the regional pest plan review, a big chunk of work. There are a number of reports that are appended, including a couple that have been sent out a bit late, our apologies, this morning. Welcome, Mr. Palmer, Lisa Myers, welcome, and Richard Lord. And I will in a moment hand this to the chair of the panel. I understand we'll get some feedback from all the panel members on specific parts of the topic, but I wonder, Councillor Robertson, is an opening point that you wish to move the recommendations to give us something to focus our debate around. Thank you. Seconded, Councillor Noon. All right, we'll leave that sit on the table in the meantime and hand over to Councillor Robertson as chairperson of the panel to lead us through this next part of the process.
Thank you very much, and it is a momentous day for the whole
council. Everyone has been involved in a long and very well considered and very smooth process, I think, to get to this point today, where hopefully the recommendations will be adopted. I wanted to acknowledge the journey that we've all been on and the huge amount of work that everyone's put in, but particularly some of the people that are in the room first and foremost, and just welcome them. So we've got, up here, as you've already introduced, we've got Lisa, who's been instrumental in preparing the plan and the strategy, providing responses to the panel, to the minutes that they put out. We wanted a very transparent process, so a lot of minutes were put out just so that submitters could see what we were considering and clearly see the responses we were receiving as well. So Lisa also made changes to the plan and strategy towards the end. Then we've had Richard, who's been thoroughly involved in that process as well, with, as an ORC staff member, and Gavin overseeing as well as director, so welcome to those people. Next of all, though, we have some other people in the room who have been very involved in there, Kirk and Shade as well, and I'm not sure if Roz Day Cleveland, I can't see her on the pole, but
she's there.
Oh, that's very good. She's been assisting the panel as a planner as well, and I know there's been a heap of late nights pushing towards this final delivery date. So thanks to all those people. We've had a great panel. We've had John Simmons, he's from the Waikato, involved in the panel, and he's been involved in pretty much all the police plans throughout the country, so really good to get an overview of how they compare. And also to fellow councillors Andrew Noone and Ella Lawton, particularly noting Andrew Noone, the role that you played in the pest reference group in pulling the initial stages together and making sure that there was thorough consultation as well. So thank you for you to that role. So, the plan and the strategy, there's two things to consider, as you will have seen, and they're different but interrelated. One's a statutory regulatory document, the other one's non-statutory but very important. So, on the 31st of October 18, it was publicly notified, and hearings were in June, and we did receive 360 submissions, which is actually a lot. Other regions didn't receive nearly as many, so there was a lot of interest in the plan and strategy. Many people submitted on both at once. There were substantial changes, as we remember, to the Biosecurity Act in 2012, which, along with the fact that the plan, Otago's pest management plan, was expiring in 2019, and also the changes to the Biosecurity Act, which meant that they needed to be quite different. Just meant that it was good timing for us, and here we are today. So, you've really got two options, which is quite normal for plan and strategy, to adopt or refer back to the panel, really. And if it does get referred back to the panel, we'd need to go right back through natural justice and the whole process. It would essentially be a plan change within a plan, really. That'd be a big, big comprehensive process, but that is an option. Yep. Just remembering that the biosecurity strategy aims to guide the delivery of all the ORC biosecurity activities over the next 10 years. So some of it will be the pest management, the pest plan, sorry. But some other, it's all our activities. Yeah, some of it's non-regulatory activities as well, and it's quite comprehensive, so no doubt you've read them and the four key priorities that are in there, and we'll hear more from Lisa in a minute, who's going to run us through a quick PowerPoint just so that we can all be up to speed on key components of the strategy and the plan. And other panel members, of course, will be able to give us their take on where we got to as well and any key changes and things that might be of interest to the council, we thought. I'm going to, as well, talk, if I can, come back to talk about some of the things that aren't in the plan but are really important for the next council to take on board. Their recommendations from the panel that for work that the council should consider. So I'll come back to that. But I just wanted to say that I think this process has been... Yeah, I mean, we can criticise the biosecurity strategy, that it's a very stringent process. You need to do the cost-benefit analysis, you need to understand thoroughly how you're going to fund the plan. And there's comprehensive consultation as well. So it is very comprehensive, but I think it's actually best practice for local government. We're putting our money where our mouth is, definitely. And the work's been done at the front end, so hopefully it's a smooth process from here as well. So yeah, knitting the plan and the strategy together is really important too. So yeah, as well as having the roles, how is it going to actually work in practice, and then how much does the council need to, you know, pay to fund that as well? It's all considered. So yeah, those are crucial components at the front end. We have got a quick PowerPoint, so I'll hand over.
So we go to Lisa now, will we? Righto. Well, welcome, Lisa.
Thank you.
You want to just run through? Yes, your microphone's working. So
great. Okay. So the Otago Regional Pest Management Plan and the Biosecurity Strategy. This is a process that started with staff mid 2017. And the Council Pest Reference Group commenced regular workshops on it. It would have been about September 2017. So it's been a very collaborative and iterative process in terms of staff involvement, councillor involvement, since that point to where we are today. So the 2009 Pest Management Plan actually has an expiry date on it. And how the Biosecurity Act works is... before a pest management plan expires, a new pest management plan proposal needs to be in place. So hence this process of going through the preparation of a new plan and also a new biosecurity strategy. So the reason these two, and most people will remember this as well, is they're being done together at the same time, is because the plan sets out, as Councillor Roberts had said, the regulatory components, and the biosecurity strategy sets out how Council will operate across the whole of all of its biosecurity activities. As Councillor Robertson discussed, there were a number of changes to the Biosecurity Act around 2012 and 2015, and that set out a really clear stepped process around how pest management plans need to be developed under it. So the plan and strategy were both notified 1st of November 2018. 360 submissions were received, and it's fair to say that... we received submission points on basically everything to do with what was in the proposed plan and strategy. Having said that, there were some really clear themes that came through. So the hearing panel considered probably approximately 50% of the submissions related to site-led areas. A lot of submissions in support of the Dunedin site-led areas. Lots of submissions on cats, hedgehogs, and submissions in support of greater controls for possums. Wild and conifers, a number of submissions on that. And so submissions on specific species too, such as gorse, broom, Russell Lupin, and a few submissions also on management and implementation and funding matters. So the next few slides, I'll essentially recap what was proposed for the strategy and for the plan, and just touch really briefly on some of the key changes that the hearing panel have recommended to those two documents. So the biosecurity strategy, to guide ORC's biosecurity activities over the next 10 years. It integrates, as I said, the statutory and non-statutory functions, and it sets out four key priorities and a series of actions to deliver good biosecurity outcomes in Otago. So those actions are up there on the slide. Proactive biosecurity management, being responsive and flexible to how ORC responds to biosecurity issues, landscape scale and site scale, so paying particular attention to particular areas where there's a need to, and being integrated and collaborative in how ORC undertakes its biosecurity functions. So that's both within council, with communities, and with stakeholders and partners. In the back of the strategy, there were key projects for the first 5 years, and as Councillor Robertson said before, those key projects are really important to the implementation of the program overall. This is a summary of some of the implementation information in the back end of the strategy, and a summary of those key projects is displayed up on the slide there. Overall, the hearing panel have recommended that the strategy largely be accepted, subject to some minor changes and to some additions. So some of the additions the hearing panel have recommended relate to some additional work required to inform a potential future marine pathway management plan, some additional work around transitional programs for wild and conifers, and in particular shelter belts, and fast-tracking some of the collaborative work to be done with predator-free Dunedin to implement the Dunedin site-led programs. So that's the strategy in a nutshell. There's obviously a number of other actions and key projects. And to inform or to essentially measure the success of both the strategy and the plan, an annual operational plan will need to be prepared. And that year-to-year reporting on that operational plan will be able to set out really clearly the measures with which the council has undertaken to achieve the actions in the strategy and the objectives in the plan, and to adjust that work program as needed to achieve everything over the 10-year life of the two documents. So the regional pest management plan, the 2009 pest management plan had 23 species. The new regional pest management plan has 51. A number of those are conifer species. So there are some new rules that apply to wild and conifers, and they apply to all conifer species, and they list in particular the species that are particularly nasty in terms of spread. There are a number of new rules called good neighbour rules. These are rules that essentially bind the Crown. General region rules, unfortunately, under the Biosecurity Act, don't bind the Crown. So in order to have the Crown be bound by some of the most important rules, some good neighbour rules have been included in the plan. There are new rules, as I said, for wild and conifers, and also for Russell lupins. So that's an addition that wasn't in the previous strategy. There are new exclusion pests. So these are about keeping species out of Otago that are currently issues in other places. And as I mentioned before too, new site-led programs around Dunedin, particularly the peninsula and the West Harbour side, and site-led programs for Lake Siphon as well. The development of the plan had to follow a stepped process, so it was very iterative. And in preparing all of these new rules and new programs, there was a thorough cost-benefit analysis that was undertaken to inform it. In addition to the species in the plan, there is also a list of what is called organisms of interest. So these are other species which may be harmful in Otago but didn't necessarily fit a rule-based approach but are still important to keep an eye on in terms of surveillance in case they become an issue in the future. So in terms of key changes to the plan as proposed, the hearing panel have essentially largely recommended that the plan as proposed be retained, subject to a number of additions for additional rules and programs. So the exclusion pests, as notified, are up there on the slide in black. And through the hearing process and the deliberation process, the hearing panel decided that Egeria and hornwort should also be included in those exclusion category. They're very nasty aquatic weeds. They're a significant problem for other councils, and it's very important that surveillance be undertaken to ensure that they stay out of Otago. Eradication pests proposed remained unchanged. There were some changes recommended to the progressive containment species, so a new good neighbour rule has been introduced for Old Man's Beard, and some changes have been made to the wild and conifer provisions to make them more robust. In a nutshell, though, the wild and conifer changes are probably one of the more significant changes compared to the previous strategy. And how the rules work is they intend to ensure that areas that have been cleared through publicly funded control works are remain clear, and that spread into those cleared areas is managed insofar as it can be. So a few changes to gorse, broom, nodding thistle and ragwort in terms of setbacks, and some new good neighbour rules for those species as well. As I said, Russell lupin is a new addition, so there are rules around how planting of Russell lupin is managed and setbacks from wild Russell lupin from waterways and rivers in Otago. A good neighbour rule has also been introduced as a recommendation from the hearing panel on that too. In terms of the site-led programs, these are largely unchanged from that which was notified, notwithstanding that some amendments have been made to the Dunedin site-led programs to essentially provide more consistency between the species that are managed in each program. As it was notified, the species were a little bit more targeted in terms of the different issues in those particular areas. A number of submitters sought more consistency in terms of how those areas are managed together, and the hearing panel have made some suggested recommendations for that. So that's essentially the changes to the proposed pest management plan. In terms of the process from here, do you have anything else you want to add before I move on to this one, Richard? Okay. In terms of the process from here, if you choose to adopt the hearing panel's recommendations today, the council staff plan is to notify the decisions on the 1st of October. The strategy, being a non-statutory document, is not subject to appeal, so essentially once it's adopted, it's adopted. The strategy is in place. The pest management plan has an appeal period of 15 working days. Within that time, those who submitted to the plan may make an application to the Environment Court seeking any changes or setting out anything that they disagree with in terms of the decision. If no appeals are received, then the plan can officially be made, which means making it operative, and that will replace the current 2009 plan. Once the plan is made, there's then 3 months to prepare an operational plan for both plan and strategy, and that is how OSD staff set out essentially the implementation and the doing of it. And once that's in place, that's measured annually the on out. And I think that is it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Lisa. Gavin, Richard, anything you wish to add?
On the stage, thanks.
Comfortable. Councillor Robertson, back in your hands. Are you going to hand over to Councillor Noon for a start off? Yep.
I just want to go back to the reference group just briefly. I can remember Councillor Laws, Councillor Hope. Touch on the common themes. We talked about greater leadership, communication, and coordination. We talked about lack of flexibility with the plan to respond to incursions. We also talked about cross-boundary issues. Strategy that we want to do requirements. There was also concern around biodiversity. Thorough stakeholder engagement process to review the documents. And in my view, I believe we've achieved all those things that came through. I just want to touch on patient briefly and explain that there was stages alluded to. The first stage was around developing a proposed plan and strategy. And that was done through talking with stakeholders, having formal consultation with them. And as that consultation process evolved, so did the documents. So then we got to the stage two, which essentially was the official notification, 1st of November 2018, hence all the submissions that came in after that. So I just wanted to just touch on that other step in the process. And in my view, and I'm sure I can speak for the rest of the panel, I think all the submissions and further information was considered fully, and the decision-making process has been robust, transparent, and based. I might go to, but maybe Councillor Lawton wants to touch on some of her issues, and then I'll just pick up and talk about possum.
Yes, absolutely. Councillor Lawton.
Just a couple of points. In particular, it was interesting with the new introduction around site lead programs, and obviously both the DM and it was interesting, there was a number of questions from community groups around wanting more site lead programs. So there is an appendix to the plan that highlights what the process would be, but I think there's a real opportunity there to create better partnerships with our community around those site lead programs, and making it really clear around how that happens, you know, what kind of front footing they can do in terms of the work before that proposal comes to our council, and I think it will work in really well with all of our biodiversity work. So there's a real opportunity there, and making it really clear about you know, what conversations need to happen in the community around that value-based protection management process would be really helpful. So there was some questions there. Wild and conifers. Wow. So it's a difficult juggle between the likes of the national policies and environmental standards there, and the work that some of our local communities have carried out over a decade or so. There were concerns on both sides of the camp, one being that there wasn't enough protection, particularly for those highly valuable areas, and then another's where, you know, look, we haven't figured out a way of how we transition our shelter belts into and away from wilding species and into something else, because they're incredibly valuable. So the new plan provides some protection. It's all about progressive containment, so it protects where we've invested funds into land. It protects that investment by providing, you know, a good neighbour rule and the 200 metre boundary rule. However, the only way that that's going to work, and we are going to continue to have progressive containment, is if we put in all the work that's highlighted in the strategy, which is around the mapping and data gathering and understanding exactly what's going on, so that when it comes to our next plan, we have the data to then say, okay, now we're actually, you know, we've got fully conifer-free areas, it's been mapped, we've got the data and the evidence, and we can actually exclusively say that. Because at the moment, if we don't do that, we're really going to just be keeping the lines where they are, and we're going to continue to potentially allow new areas to open up to infestation, because we don't generally have protection for that. And we're really relying on our community to continue to do the excellent work that they're doing, so we need to keep... Which generally is, overall, the whole... Plans are incredibly stringent in terms of what we can do, so it wholly relies on our strategy being followed through and actually implemented, and it's going to be a really important job for the next. All of that work needs to be mapped and needs to be captured as data and created into information that we can then share. There were a number of times during the role as on the panel where we asked where information was coming from. And what we learn is that we've got some incredible staff who've put a huge amount of time and knowledge into this, but it's not freely accessible to our community. And that's a real challenge. So we somehow need to mine that information out of their brains and figure out, and then also to test it and make sure that it's, you know, scientifically rigorous as well, so that we can uphold it. And again, looking towards that next plan, another 10 years away, capturing all that information and data so we can continue to make progress rather than continuing to just hold the line on where we're at, or potentially even not holding the line because we don't know whether or not we're holding the line. And that's really important. So there is the Pest Hub proposal, which is going to be incredibly valuable, which leads me into the final point I wanted to make, which was around methods. So ultimately the plan doesn't propose methods for pest control, and neither does the strategy. We had a huge number of submissions on it, including cats, hedgehogs, the welfare of animals, but also the use of toxins in the environment, and people are really concerned about this. So as a response, the response was that ORC isn't advocating for a particular method for any of these, as long as we're, legally doing what we're allowed to do. There was a really strong ask from the community that we do more, in fact, with some leadership, and that we draw the line around what some of those methods may or may not be. And, for example, we've just put out a notice that we're using glyphosate on ditches and drains at the moment, and those sorts of issues are actually really contentious in the community, and we hear. So we'll have to actually make some quite big decisions around how that pest type is used. It's going to be, recommending different methods, but whether or not, how we word that to say whether or not we're, supporting them. There's an opportunity for council to make a statement, I think.
Thank you, Councillor Law.
Wild and trees is something a lot of people were interested in, but rabbits and possums definitely are too, if you want to comment on them.
That'd be useful.
Develop a possum control program focusing on ospreys, completed areas for long-term bovine tuberculosis eradication and biodiversity gains. A volunteer landowner program is anticipated, starting with the pest management plan site-led. Informed by successful regions. And Hawke's Bay and Taranaki have two successful models on a larger scale rather than just a smaller site led. And I just want to touch on how they implemented the regime. And the approach has been is that it's landowner led. The regional council would advise landowners of the potential program, encourage them to sign up on a voluntary basis. Then council would potentially part fund the initial possum control and consultation with the signed up landowners. After the possum population has been reduced, the landowner would be responsible for sustaining at that lower level going forward. And landowner occupies ongoing responsibility to maintain the possums at a reduced level. Could be set out in some sort of formal agreement between the council and the landowner. That's just a rough thumbnail sketch of how that would be implemented.
Yeah, that'd be good. We didn't get all that many submissions, really, but it's an issue that we talk about a lot, yeah.
And we also know that it's the landowner responsibility to deal with pests, and also think that it came through that there really is not a clear, when they talk about landowner responsibilities, essentially it's a generic term, whether you're plan? Lobbying TLAs to ensure that they impose certain conditions on developers. So, you know, sites are developed, whoever the landowner is in the future would carry on their responsibility to maintain fences. Obviously, greater education and information, particularly in that peri-urban. Within the Otago region, shall control feral on the land they occupy below level 3. Occupier within the Otago region shall, upon receipt of a written direction from an authority, shall control feral rabbit densities on their land at or below level 3, the modified 500 metres. The neighbours close. And the last one is around. Those first two rules.
Councillor Robson.
Sorry, I don't want to labour this too much. I just want to go over some of the recommendations that aren't in there, and I know you've read these already, probably. So other key ones were around Russell Lopins, and perhaps weren't considered well that some people are using these as crops on their farms. The nitrogen fixing, and they actually do have value, and that was presented clearly. And so we put in a good neighbour rule of 10 metres, did a cost-benefit analysis. Any little change we want to make had to go right back through the cost-benefit analysis, so that happened. And then, yeah, so workability around that, we went back to the landowners. It was a very robust process, I'd have to say, any time a change was made. In terms of robust process, and something you guys got to see as well, was the extended gorse and broom free area. Yep, so that affected 28 landowners in the Cadrona Valley, and we received no submissions as a result of the approval that council gave for staff to seek extra feedback. So that area has been extended to the north to the Cadrona ski field area. We did, as Councillor Lawton commented on, receive a lot of submissions on cats. That issue will not go away. It's something that people are very passionate about, and I'll talk about that again in a minute. For biodiversity, feral cats and site-led programs remains in there. What else have we got? Important. Yeah, I guess the use of toxins did keep coming up as well, and ORC doesn't promote specific methods, as Councillor Lawton said, but nevertheless, whether you're a user or somebody that was opposed to use of toxins, there's an ethos of reducing the use of them out there these days, so something to note. Right, recommendations that are key observations that we've had to making this thing work. That's really for, I guess, Richard and Gavin to be able to take to the next council and be aware of. Certainly that operational plan. So as well as the strategy, there's the requirement to do an operational plan, and it's annually, is it? Yes. So this is a very, very transparent process. From the next council will be able to see exactly what's required to implement the plan and strategy and the operational plan and the resourcing requirements of it. And as I said, I think that's really best practice. It's great, but it's a huge investment as well for the council in biosecurity and biodiversity. We need to turn this into a user-friendly document. It's quite weighty that people can actually use, pick up and say, gee, yeah, this is what I need to do for my rabbits or my Russell Lupins or whatever in an easy way. So we've got to transform that. There's something called organisms of interest in there. So they haven't quite got in there in a formal capacity of doing something about them, but they're troublesome, I suppose. So we want to put resourcing in there, and it's a requirement to conduct surveillance on them. So there'll be resourcing requirements for that, so that in perhaps the next plan, so you might see some of them in there. Probably worth reminding people that the Biosecurity Act requires you to have actually done what you said you're going to do. So if you say you're going to, you know, eradicate, you actually have to eradicate in the 10 years. They're not lofty, aspirational goals. They're things that we actually have to do. So sometimes it's a stepped thing. So this plan might be a step towards the next one, and the surveillance is part of that. Pest hub has already been mentioned, but really key for the community to come for information from us. We'd like to the council to consider dialogue with TLAs to promote microchipping bylaws for cats. There was a lot of submissions on that. We're aiming to deal with feral cats in Dunedin, site lead. But, yeah, if we want to know what feral cats look like, we need a microchip sometimes. Council.
Smoke moggy.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah, exactly. Effects of abandoning cats within site-led areas. We need to educate people about that. We have got people, and I'm not commenting on this being right or wrong, but establishing cat colonies where they're not feral because they are fed, but they're essentially released, and there's a lot of them. Yeah. There are, exactly as Councillor Noon said, some tools that can be considered for urban and peri-urban rabbit control. You can do things in urban areas, and we should be looking at what we can do. Okay, the last one is, just really strongly want to emphasise that we need to prioritise and commence work on possum control program that Councillor Noon's outlined. It's really important to our community. We had a lot of submissions on that too. So getting to a sustained control approach after ospreys exited, we strongly encourage, and I know that's what the intention will be, work on this to see how that can happen. So that is where we're at in recommendations, and sorry that took so long.
No, this comprehensive document, there's a lot there, and has significant implications on our work program, so we need to understand the breadth of it, and it's been a big block of work, so yeah. Thank you. All right, you're finished, Councillor Robson, you're complete? Yep, yeah. Right. Discussion, debate, questions.
Sorry, Councillor Hogan. Going to move to the recommendations now, Steve?
I'll do that at the conclusion. They've been moved and seconded at the start. We're now debating the whole lot. Yeah.
Yep.
Councillor Hogan.
Thank you for the chair. I was going to ask Richard Lord, I guess, and Dr. Palmer.
Yeah.
There's some fair grunt now with the rabbits, and Councillor Noon has just loaded 6.1.6.1. 1, 2 and 3. I think the key, obviously, to all of this is going to be the education. And I see that our communication is going to have to be very, very clear. Have you got some thoughts on that, please? Because you'll be one of the people that's key to this.
Yeah, thanks, Councillor Hope. The way I certainly see it, communication is a key role, and we've been really putting a lot of effort into that in the last 2 years. But I think as much as we need to be out there doing a lot of door knocking and talking to individuals and groups, and just ensuring that control is being undertaken. There was a bit of a gap there for some time where we didn't really have what I'd say good contractors, but there are ones coming into the market now. I'd certainly like to see that increase, or those companies certainly have a bit of support there from the likes of ourselves in terms of providing more information, advice, being able to point landowners in their direction as well. We've had a bit of a history where there are some operators out there that I just don't feel are suited, but as I say, that gap has been taken. But certainly one-on-one individual door-knocking, property visits, that sort of thing is most important going forward.
Obviously, with some good communication, I mean, you've got to have something, obviously, to hand them.
Yes.
A piece of paper or a series of pieces of paper, this and this and this and this. And I just want to be sure that we've worked hard to get this to this level, and then there's been this great hearing, and thank you, I appreciate everything I've read in here. I suppose now it's the final stage of making sure that we've got everything to go out with to these property owners, because it's such a big change. As you say, the peri-urban, there's more, we met that lady, we was at that day at Waitaki, wasn't it? We went to the plan with Nick Donnelly over there, who said, you know, she was so frustrated. They had 200 acres and they had the problems with the rabbits, and it's that sort of person and that sort of, if you like, the neighbours around her that need to understand how much this is going to change and the impact. I just want to be sure that we've got that out there. We're going to get that out there as well. This is a big problem, rabbits, and it's not going to go away.
Absolutely, you're dead right. They are a major problem in Otago, and certainly the biggest areas of concern are more the peri-urban areas that we have, and they're increasing in those areas. And there's just more and more. Your tools are very limited as to what you can do in those areas, so we really need to look at that in a meaningful way.
Councillor Lawson?
I've got a big picture thing, and then I've got some issues to raise. But can I just first of all say to the councillors who've sat through this and done that, whatever I'm about to say, there's no criticism of you involved in that at all. Thank you for your time and your effort and your energy. If you go to page 230 of the pest management plan, you will see a map. I asked for that map repeatedly, and it's great to see it there. It's a map of Otago's number one pest, rabbits, as Councillor Noon points out. And as you'll see, that map includes areas in which rabbit proneness is quote-unquote extreme, and they are everywhere. Interestingly, they are probably not in peri-urban areas, they are across Otago. And I'm struggling here because I'm struggling to understand why, when rabbit policy from the ORC has failed, why you would seek to manifest that again, the failure. Because the failure is of policy and of implementation. Here we are saying that we are going to leave this to landowner responsibility. Well, that hasn't worked. It has failed, categorically. And that's why that map's there, with those extreme stuffs there. And yet we're going to carry on doing this. So instead of taking an active role in rabbit, trying to control the number one pest in Otago, we're going to leave it to landowners who have failed spectacularly in that role over the last 20 years, to the point now where we have infestation at levels just prior to the illegal release of the original virus back in the late 90s. So this is just a recipe for failure. In addition to which, and I said this on the press reference group, the wider political issue here and the much wider policy issue, Andrew, is are we going to be proactive or reactive? And I urged at that press reference group, the policy's failed, we need to be proactive. If you want to control this press, we need to take an active role in it. Nope, we've decided again, hands off, it'll work, it's failed in the past. Why would it suddenly succeed now? That's the first thing. We have been proactive, to be fair, in the 2 years or 3 years that I've sat around this table, and we released the Korean virus into the hinterland. And we didn't expect it to fail quite as much as we did in the areas where it did, because we didn't understand beforehand that there was a resistance from those rabbits in those particular areas as a consequence. But nevertheless, that was an important policy point. We were proactive. We sought to get involved. We tried to make a difference. We tried to attack our number one pest in Otago. But that's not here. That's not in this pest strategy. There's nothing proactive about it all. There it is all on page 231. So I'm just raising that because the next issue was, well, the operational plan will flow from the strategy. Yes, but we haven't been doing anything. For the last 3 years since I've sat around here, I don't know how many doors that we've knocked on to say, guess what? Your MMS, your modified McLean scale, you're not observing it, and we're going to enforce it. And I consistently get complaints, and Graham and I have consistently had them over the last 3 weeks, wouldn't you say, Graham, as we've been touring around Dunstan, about farmers who are saying, you guys are just missing when it comes to enforcing the good neighbour rule. And I think the good neighbour rule is a cop-out. I think philosophically it's a cop-out because it relies upon other people doing the work that we should be doing, and rabbits is the prime example. So I just wanted to raise that with you. I'd be fascinated to get the response because I really want to know how this plan will suddenly make things better. If this is the plan it essentially had, and it's led to these huge infestations of rabbits getting worse by the day. So if someone could explain that to me, that would be great. That's the first thing. The second thing is, and this is I'm a bit concerned, there's a sort of an unwritten convention that you don't enact massive policy change, Stephen, just prior to an election and before a new incoming council comes in. It's an unwritten convention at political level, at a national level, but also here. We're going to have five new councillors sitting around this table at the very least. And we're going to essentially say, this is it, because I think there are some philosophical issues around good neighbour that we need to discuss. Now, I can see what's happened here. We've ended up in a process. So we've gone through the process, and here we go, and we've listened to submissions. But we actually haven't attacked the big issue, the philosophical issue. Why have we got pests? Why are there infestations? Why are there new incursions all the time of new pests? Is that because we're not playing our role in a proactive fashion? Is that because the good neighbour policies have failed? And I would argue that is the philosophical discussion we need around this table. Now, I don't see that in here. I do know this rabbit policy will fail. I know it will fail because it's already failed and it's failing. And so I can't accept that we're going to go ahead with a policy for our number one pest, which the evidence is not going to work. And somebody can please provide me how this is going to work. I'd love to know.
A couple of questions here. Councillor Noon, are you able to respond on behalf of the panel?
I'm not sure whether this would be adequate.
Okay.
However, if I take you to the biodiversity strategy, page 31.
Yep.
And under, it's in the middle of the page, but under a key action, it's the last key action, it's in the middle of the page. This is develop a program to facilitate the establishment of landowner-led rabbit control groups. This shall be modelled on the best practice examples within Otago and other regions. Time frame 1 year. Who will we be working with? Partnering? Other regional councils, DOC, and Manitoba Pest Management Company as a model across the region. So looking at potentially comes back to the fundamental that is the landowner responsibility. You'll be aware, as the rest of us around the table, that the Otago Regional Council no longer provides pest management services. We step right back from that. We spent $100,000, I think, the last financial year cutting carrot. That's all we did. So we're very much monitoring, focused on compliance, landowners' responsibility. What we're saying in that action is that we are prepared to promote the idea based on the principle that the Manitoba Pest Management have successfully implemented for the Manitoba. So we're not sitting on our hands.
How's it going to work in Cromwell or Bannockburn?
No. Look, I don't know the detail, but all I'm saying is that fundamentally we're pushing through on the landowner-led pest management control. That underpins this action. And can I just make a comment with regards to the timing and the political process? And absolutely accept that. But I would much rather have a transparent, robust, thorough process rather than trying to either rush it through, you know, 6 months ago or whatever, trying to meet a time frame so it's well beyond any sort of political process. And I feel that we've been able to achieve that. And I suppose the proof will be in the pudding when this plan goes out for whether there's anyone out there, any submitter, that would appeal. And obviously we heard that the biodiversity strategy doesn't have an appeal rights. But I would much rather see us work within a time frame that ensures that process is thorough. I'm not sure others may want to contribute to help answer those two questions, but maybe...
Thank you. Councillor Robertson, anything you wish to add?
Yeah, just lending weight to that, the whole occupier-led philosophy isn't just for rabbits. It's
that's right.
Woven throughout, and not only our plan, but nationally. So that's just a thing to note as a philosophy. You could consider grouping together, as Councillor Noon said, and we will try and support that because we think it is a good approach to group together.
Yep.
Federated Farmers submitted on that as well. There's certainly a desire for grouping together, but led by community again, but we could act as a facilitator potentially, is an approach. Another point there on rabbits. Yeah, we received 15 submissions and we can actually only consider what we heard on those submissions too.
Righto, moving on. Councillor Bell?
Yeah, just with the rabbits, through you, Mr. Chairman. Councillor Noon, just with that McLean Scale 3, I want to get some surety of just how strong that is because it's already, I understand, in the current plan and that's what we follow. I know for a fact that regional council staff have been asked to go with this good neighbour approach to go and see a chap in the middle of two properties and to inspect that property, and they believe that was breaching McLean 3. Now, that hasn't been done, and I can assure you that has been officially approached to the ORC particular department to get done. What actually happened in the end, they sent a contractor out, and immediately that person in the middle of those two farms, he wasn't going to get the gauze out of his pocket and do some of the things perhaps that he should have been doing.
Right, so need to focus, Councillor Bell, on the actual pest plan.
Yeah, well,
operational.
I do, but I want to have some insurance that with this, that this council has funding to be able to do the monitoring, because that was what the feedback I got back from the ORC employee in the end. He said all the money was going into the water, and so he couldn't do it. So I want to make sure that we have the this plan has to be able to address that we have the funding there to be able to do that monitoring. That's really the key thing that I'm trying to address.
Okay, so I'd like to address a couple of things. The first thing is your funding question, which is that in the paper, I think it talks about our current funding, which is about 1.3, and the additional funding required or the gap to implement this pest plan is about 1.7. So the answer is
extra 400K.
We need some extra money. That's hugely clear. And that all that allows Richard's team to do is to implement the pest plan. So it doesn't allow them to do any of the extra work that they do around biodiversity and other things. So absolutely, there'll be some more money required. I know the Chair, if you'll indulge me slightly, I just did want to correct a couple of statements that have been made. If you go to page 162 of your agenda, page 20 of the annual report for this year, you will see that we did a total of 105 rabbit inspections, where we found 77 properties were compliant and 28 properties were not, and those properties were issued with notices of direction. Just to be clear what our powers are, we can issue notices of direction. They require some action by the landowner. If the landowner does not undertake the necessary action, we can arrange for that action to be taken and charge them. So how much we do, of course, depends on how big the budget is, but it is incorrect to say that we haven't been conducting those inspections and that we haven't been following up, because right there in the annual report it says completely the opposite.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just like some clarification on this, because every presentation we get, you know, talks about how simple our rabbit rules now are. But then, you know, with Councillor Noon, to be fair, you know, spat out the three and the two priorities, and maybe Lisa can actually help us. My understanding is that yes, we did the monitoring, yes, we did the processes, but actually, we didn't actually have the teeth when the rubber hit the road to do a prosecution because of the complexity of the role in the past plan, and that it was either some extra information was required. I think there was a time situation in there, Lisa. And we've simplified that.
Righto.
I'd like clarification on that.
Richard might be able to spell out the difference between the current plan and the new plan that's
in terms of prosecution and
directing action, let's call it.
Look, the biggest hurdle for us over the last 10 years was the introduction of the rabbit management plan that was a requirement when a property was identified as being non-compliant, and farm owners or landowners could just string that out as long as they wished if they wanted to. But we're taking that out of this current plan or proposed plan, which means we'll be able to go to straight to notice of direction if we choose to do so. So that's a major hurdle out of the way.
So I think there's an improvement. It doesn't necessarily solve what's going on around Cromwell and Bannockburn. So, you know, there's some challenges, and hopefully community groups, Maniatoto group can consents, all this type of stuff can help there. My question is actually to do with, after my assistance, is to do with possums. You know, like, is the whole possum thing sort of 10 years behind the rabbit thing in terms of our processes? Like, are we now moving more into filling that void in terms of monitoring and so forth? Do we need, for example, a similar prosecution type of tool, like you've just sort of outlined? Like, for example, you're going to go to the farmer is going to step in, and if they don't achieve certain numbers, I mean, what are we really going to do? Do we have the teeth there to similar to the rabbit discussion?
Who wants to answer that?
I'll give it a crack.
Councillor Noon, start, please.
Okay, go back to the comments you made earlier about the possums.
Yeah.
If that regime was going to be put in place post-Osprey.
Yeah. Isn't there a transition?
Yeah, well, okay.
We're in the transition.
Yeah, okay, we're in the transition.
Yeah, so it would need some rules to achieve application. Yeah. There would need to be some rules of the plan. The plan would require to be, we'd have to go through a review process, and those rules would be implemented, and they talk in those other areas, Hawke's Bay, Taranaki, they have a residual trap catch percentage.
Do we need to wait 10 years for that?
Just finish.
Yeah.
And that trap catch percentage depends on, normally for farmland, it hovers around about 5%. If it's in and around high-value ecological areas, they drop it down to even lower. So they put the bar higher in terms of control, but that's potentially where we could end up. But maybe Richard or Lisa wants...
Yeah, could I perhaps add something to that?
Yes, thank you, Lisa.
So if regional council pursues a landowner opt-in approach to possum control and a possum control program, what the strategy sets up is a project for that to be developed within the Dunedin site-led area to support biodiversity in those areas and to transition from the time when Osprey will be departing. The options for an opt-in process, how that works is if land occupiers sign up to the process and the regional council can support them with initial knockdown or an initial transition process to help them get started once Osprey departs. If they sign up to that, that can actually be made, or amendments to the plan can be made without the need for a full plan review. Okay. So essentially rules requiring residual trap cap levels for those land occupiers that have signed up to this scheme can be added to a pest management plan without going through the process that that you're currently busy with. And that is a process which other regional councils have used, which has been very successful. And then essentially they've started off with a small area that over time, once landowners have been brought on board and council funding is available to support them with initial knockdown, those programs get bigger and bigger, and slowly the parts of the regions that were infested with possums become less and less. So it starts small, but over time it can expand. And if that's done in the right way, there's no need to go through a full plan review process to do that. And that's set up in the strategy.
And that can help an outside of the Dunedin area as well?
Yes, you're talking across the region.
It can do, yes. The strategy sets up a first project to start in the site-led area, but once you have that program established, that can be expanded to wherever is appropriate.
Yep. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Bell, you've already spoken.
I know, but I had a couple of questions to answer.
Right, I'll come back to you in a minute. Richard, did you want something to add there?
Yes, certainly, Mr Chairman. I just want to add something to that. Councillor Newton, Lisa, thank you. In addition to that, if you look at the Hawke's Bay and Taranaki examples, what they've set up there is community trusts, which have really assisted the council to undertake their work. And I think that if we're going to go down that track, that sort of model needs to be replicated in Otago.
Not on the pest plan.
Thank you. Councillor Kempton?
Just very briefly, just a couple of things. The first thing is, and it's mentioned in the documentation we received, there's the suggestion that we used to go out and shoot rabbits. And I think we have to be very, very careful about that. What we did was stood in the marketplace as a contractor and went and shot rabbits when people employed us. Right? We were a contractor. But you go back to 1989 and the farming community said, oh, look, we want a bit less government. We don't want to. We can do it ourselves. So the rabbit boards went. Right at the moment, there is a very good cooperative commercial model in operation for pest control. We know that. Now, the suggestion that, oh, well, that'll work for some people, but it won't work in Bannockburn, well, the good people of Bannockburn ring up and ask them to come down and fix a few rabbits in a peri-urban area. That's not rocket science. The models are there. I'm absolutely supportive of that model being built around the region, and people actually taking that level of responsibility on a cooperative commercial basis. So I'm very happy with the way it sits. Thank you.
Keen to move on. Are there any other comments? Councillor Bell?
Two questions I had remaining were about the Russell Lupins and the shelter belts.
I'll address the Russell Lupins to Councillor Robinson first. Councillor Robinson, you mentioned about the boundary being set on a cost benefit. I do know why they are planting those lupins out. That's because of erasium. It's in that sort of country, and that's why it's doing something for that land. But what I want to know is how was the 10-metre boundary arrived at?
Basically, a lupin plant has explosive seeds, and in the hearing we asked how far the seeds could travel, and the response that we received was whatever it was, metres, and we felt that 10 metres was a reasonable distance, adding a few extra metres on to that to protect the neighbour. 10 metres sounded reasonable. And it went through the cost-benefit analysis after that.
Yep. And the other question is probably for Councillor Lawton, because she raised about the shelter belts, and I'm thinking of the sticks. And, I mean, this document and everything else, I only just got it on Sunday, and I haven't had a chance. I was back into it at 4 o'clock this morning before I came down here. But what I want to know is where exactly are we with the response to those shelter belts that we talked about with regards to the sticks?
Mr. Law, yeah.
You're up. There are, as I remember it, 5 or 6 species that are prohibited completely, which means that if those shelter belts are those particular species, they will need to be removed. However, if they're not of those species, and they're outside of where there's been previous investment, so within that 200-metre boundary of previous investment, won't be required to be removed. There is a proposal in the strategy that ORC work with those landowners to come up with a plan. Ultimately at this stage they've got 10 years. I would like to see this council tackle that earlier. We didn't have enough evidence or submissions to be able to.
If it's helpful, I can read the strategy action out that relates to shelter belts.
Thanks, Lisa.
Implement a transition program for land occupiers where land contains contorta shelter belts and planted conifers under 1 hectare to assist with proactive management prior to new rules being established. This is new rules and a subsequent plan. ORC will undertake work to compile a registry of shelter belts across the region that may act as a seed source and prepare maps to record spatially existing shelterbelt locations and at-risk areas. This would provide a baseline from which to set up a detailed surveillance program and future reporting on the overall success of the program. And that action is identified within the next 2 years. So the purpose of that program is to proactively work with land occupiers that have contorta or other conifer shelterbelts, where those shelterbelts may pose a spread risk to other properties, and how to proactively work with them in assisting them with information and guidance about how they may transition to stock shelter that is less, for want of a better word, spready, and to assist them with information about that over the next 10 years. So if new rules are put in place to require removal in the future, those people affected have been given a lot of time to tackle the issue themselves proactively.
So just thinking of the sticks, and we've talked about it here before in workshops, etc., just for my clarification, are we able to assist them with the right types of
species,
shelter belt, species that can be used to be able to stand to those hard climates that are experienced and slow growth in survival in the sticks.
Yes, that's the kind of information that could be included in ORC guidance to support those people.
All right. I'll just make a couple of comments. pleased to see the provisions around wildings that is going to support the expenditure of public money, the follow-up and the good neighbour rule there. Pleased to see the pest hub and a lot of good information that we're able to have freely available there. And also pleased to see the pilot program as suggested with respect to possum control. clearly there's a strong demand. We've talked about this a lot in the community. Community understands the biodiversity benefits that are gained from possum control. They've seen that as part of the osprey operations over years. And good first up with the pilot program, and hopefully we can follow off the leads on those site-led. So, yeah. Thank you, panel and staff. Enormous amount of work over two more years. And so we've got to this point.
Can I just ask a question? It's not a comment. It's just a question.
Well, I'm being generous.
Thank you so much. We talked about it before, pest management strategy, and we said, and plan, sorry. So it's strategy and plan in here, isn't it, Stephen?
It's a biosecurity, it's a biosecurity strategy and a pest plan.
That's
yep.
Right, yeah. A plan's an operational piece of work.
A pest plan isn't. There is a there's an operational plan that sits out of that. We've got 3 months to build following our approval of this pest plan.
Can you show me in here where it says we're going to measure the effectiveness of our plan?
Can you just speak up? I just couldn't quite hear that.
Can you show me in here where it says we're going to measure the effectiveness of our plan? Now, I've raised this before. One thing to say we're going to eradicate or control or contain pests. It's another thing to measure it. What measurement controls do we have here to say this is working?
Robertson, are you able to assist there? Or
Lisa,
Lisa, what are the provisions in the Act that need to be taken into account?
Yes, it's set out in both the plan and the strategy that an operational management plan will be prepared and that will be measured annually.
Right,
we haven't got one yet.
An operational plan is required to be prepared within 3 months of a pest management plan becoming operative, so there is not one in place yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. All right. Time's against us. I'm going to move on. The recommendations have been moved and seconded. No further discussion. I'm going to put them. They're very clearly laid out there. There's five of them. Mm. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Yes. No.
Carried.
Can I have my...
I have mine recorded too, please.
Noted. Right, it's 12:15. We do have some hot food there for lunch, so we'll adjourn for lunch. I would like to encourage us... We'll try and get started at 12:45. All right, so be prompt. And I'm going to try and get item 10.2 through... 10.2. Before... before we go to public forum and move on with the other items on our agenda. And all right, so we stand adjourned. Half an hour for lunch.
Is it 6 a.m.?
No, it's the submissions. Highly productive land, natural products, sustainable urban development.